This season of the Outdoor Life podcast is brought to you by Moultrie Mobile Edge Pro.
Over most of whitetail country, it is the pre-rut. Bucks are moving, and we're all trying to figure out when and where to hunt. On which days will we see the best deer activity? When should we skip out of work? In making these decisions, hunters look at weather forecasts, wind direction, and let's be honest, some of us still look at the moon phases. That's all good. But sometimes those old rules of hunting the rut, well, they aren't exactly proven in research. I'm Editor-in-Chief Alex Robinson, and today on the podcast, I'm talking to the much-renowned Dr. Grant Woods. Woods is a wildlife researcher, and he's a diehard deer hunter, and he has run extensive trail cam programs for many years. Here's how he thinks about deer activity, the weather, and the rut. Thanks for joining us, Grant. It's good to have you. It's a cold morning, almost November. What a time to be a deer hunter and to talk about deer hunting.
That's right. What are we doing sitting in here? We should be out in a stand somewhere.
No. Well, soon. I won't keep you too long. We'll try to keep this pretty straightforward. The reason I want to talk to you is because we just had this awesome cold front come and smack into the heart of whitetail country. And all kinds of folks are starting to see their deer, the big bucks, on trail camera. Maybe they're starting to see them in their stands. Maybe they're starting to kill them. And I want to talk to you to just kind of get a deeper understanding of weather, pre-rut deer movement, and just what we can kind of expect to see in the next week to 2 weeks as far as just deer activity while we're hunting. So, you know, kind of starting with this cold front and this pre-rut activity, you know, this is like what classically all deer hunters hope for. Are we right about that? Like, should we be as excited as we are for this moment, as excited as I am in this moment?
I'm excited. I'm a deer hunter first, you know, wildlife biologist second. I'm certainly excited. And I hunted yesterday afternoon, saw some good deer. But the research, you know, my buddies at State University System and put GPS collars called fitting collars on deer say that weather's not much of an issue. And that's kind of in the last year or two caused a little controversy between hunters and researchers and a lot of, you know, online chatter out there.
Huh.
I'm wondering if often it's the case they're saying the same thing but saying it differently. So GPS collars, for the most part, don't have a video on there, right? So they're looking at steps per hour. They can tell steps almost like our iPhone track steps, you know, steps per day and the boundary where they're going. And in the pre-rut, bucks don't, we know this for fact, years and years of research, not just mine, others. Deer don't, you know, just go willy-nilly all outside their home range, but they do walk more within their home range, seeking that receptive doe, which drives the whole system. And kind of my definition, and others too, of the pre-rut is when there's less than 25% of the does that are receptive. So they're moving more, right? Because there's not a receptive doe behind the, you know, proverbial every tree out there. So they're seeking, they're moving more. And then if they do happen to, you know, get a date with a receptive doe and her home range is here and the bucks is here, well, she may drag him into her home range. And that's when we see excursions this time of year. So that's the biology. Every day, there's a few more does receptive. There's more of that perfume in the air. And it just kind of brings a frenzy to the bucks. But we're early enough and throughout most of the whitetails range, excluding parts of Florida, South Texas, you know, the Black Belt, Mississippi, Alabama, whatever. Not that many does. Less than 25% are receptive. So scrapes are red hot right now. They're working them day and night. Bucks are on their feet more. A lot of good stuff. Did that coincide with this cold front? I suspect that's what some of my research buddies are going to say. Oh, of course you are. It's the pre-rut. I'm going to tell you my trail cameras, our cold front, we literally went from high 70s, low 80s to 30 and under in a 24-hour period. So the rut did not increase. The percent of receptive does did not, you know, hook an L right there. It's a bell-shaped curve. It's a gradual day-to-day increase. And my trail cameras, and I'm a trail camera guy. I mean, I got a bunch out here. I'm not going to say how many, but think dozens, not three, okay?
Right.
And I have an app so I can monitor what's going on. And when that code front hit, I got a big spike. I mean, a big spike. As a matter of fact, I'm going to let it go there too, then compare to the same days last year. All right. So if it's, we know the rut is the same time at the same place geographically year after year. It does not vary by the moon. We know that, you know, that's not a factor. That's going to get a lot of hate mail, but the moon is not a factor under huge amounts of research, high quality research, not based on behavior, based on conception dates of fawns and stuff like that. So that one's nailed down. But how about this behavior thing and activity? That's what hunters are really interested in.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go back and look at this same couple of days last year and the weather. I don't recall a cold front. I remember it being hot. Like, gosh, I wish I wasn't wearing short sleeves out here. And see if I got that big spike on that day or within a day or two, either way. Because I'm saying, and this just reaffirms what I've seen throughout my hunting career. Maybe you have, lots of people have. That's why when scientists say this, a lot of hunters go, man, I don't know. I can remember grandpa killing those big deer every time a cold front come through. So I'm saying there's some miscommunication that the research is usually looking at home range size or something besides that weather. And a really good friend of mine and an outstanding researcher, Dr. Deffenbaugh, he's at Penn State. He runs a huge research unit there at their deer lab. Just looked at this question when they had a little cold front a little earlier on, so it wasn't as tied to the pre-rut. And he had a lot of fuzz or noise in the data, kind of an opening for hunters to say, well, you know, maybe there is something there. And I think it kind of, reading his post, it kind of made Dwayne think, I need to find a way to study this more. And here's the issue from a scientific point of view. When exactly is that cold front?
Right.
On any given area. So my trail cameras showed a definitive increase in activity that was too quick of change to be related to the pre-rut coming on. And it was too quick a change for, you know, the moon only changes a small amount from day to day to day.
Right.
It was a pressure, temperature, / weather change. And it happened quick at our place this year.
So what you're saying kind of is that it's realistically possible for both the hunters who are kind of going on anecdotal field notes.
Observations. Let's say observations. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, observations and the researchers who are going off radio caller, you know, data, they're kind of both can be right, even though they're kind of coming to slightly different conclusions.
Sure.
They're just sort of explaining it differently, maybe.
Well, let's also think about this as a scientist, put my scientist hat on now.
Sure.
Typically, I can't publish something unless there's a 95% confidence interval, you know. It's got to be so certain that 95 times out of 100, that's going to happen. Well, there's a lot of conflicting things. When did the barometer rise? You know, how much of a temperature change was it? What stage of the pre-rut rut are we in? What's the local food sources? There's a lot of noise.
Yeah.
And when there's a lot of noise, a statistician or a good biologist that's doing really good work, he's going to say, I can't say that because there's too much noise. They're going to be a little bit more conservative if they're a good, if they're doing honest science. They need to be very conservative before they make a proclamation like, boy, the cold front really puts deer on their feet.
Yeah.
And I have tried as a scientist back in university days to tease out all that noise, but there's so many factors that it's really tough to do.
Yeah. Well, let's put your hunter hat back on for a second. And now let's look into this weekend and the week that follows. You know, the cold weather is here. In a lot of places, it's going to warm up a little bit. Let's say that you didn't shoot that big buck or you didn't see this flurry of activity that that lots of other folks are talking about. Like, should you be discouraged as a hunter? Like, do you need to rethink what you're doing? Or what's your advice for those folks who like hunted through this, but they just didn't get the results that they had hoped for?
Yeah, maybe like me last night, I was in a good pinch point and just not the deer or deer I was looking for, a mature deer come through, right? Some younger bucks come through, One worked a scrape, put on a great show, but I didn't release an aerial charter season here in Missouri. No, because remember, the rut is a bell-shaped curve, and we're definitively climbing up that curve. And deer are going to breed at the same time. I mean, you know, within 24 hours or so every year, not an individual deer. We're talking a population. Don't want to mislead someone. So we're increasing in intensity. And if it's 80 degrees, but the prom only happens once where you hunt, it's going to happen. And hunters often debate that. But if you look on the backside, fawns are born the same time at the same place every year, you know, within a 3 or 4 week window or something like that. Fawns are, there's going to be some early fawns, a big cluster of fawns, and then the late fawns. And if they weren't born at the right time, especially up north where you were, if they're born way too early, they're falling in a snowbank and they're not going to make it.
Right.
Or if they're born too late, they're not going to gain enough winter weight, excuse me, before the next winter, and they're not going to make it. So the system's pretty refined over long time. So the rut's going to happen at the same time. And it's even more condensed, it seems, based on data up north, because there's a narrow window. You just don't pass on your genes if you don't fit that window. So, no, every day is going to be better. I'll be hunting this weekend. If I'm not tagged, but this weekend I'll be hunting. The temperatures here are going to get, you know, they're going to go up 10 or 15 degrees more. Here's what I found throughout my career. I use a 10%, you know, if I'm going, well, I could work today and hunt tomorrow, or hunt today and work tomorrow. Because that's the choice a lot of us face, right?
Absolutely.
I'm really looking for, when it's been warm, I want a 10%, and it's a time it should be cool, like hunting season, and it's warmer than normal.
Sure.
I get really excited if there's a 10%, not 10 degrees, 10%. So it's 80, and it's dropping down to low 70s. That excites me as a hunter.
Hmm.
And on the backside, man, it's January. I haven't tagged yet. It has been wicked cold. The wind's blowing sideways. And it's going to warm up 10%, which may not be much, 30 to 33, you know, wherever you are. Man, yeah, I'm going hunting. Because at that time, they're looking for that warm day. Right now, a cool day. It's wicked cold out there. Those deer need a warmer day so they can forage without burning so many calories. Very similar to humans. So if we lived outside,
Yeah.
So no, this weekend's going to be awesome because whatever increase we're going to have in temperature, which at least here is going to get about normal. Normal days are great days. So temperature's going to be kind of in the normal range here, and the rut's increasing in intensity. Those two factors, it's going to be a great time to be in a tree stand.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, that's, I think that's great to hear because folks, you know, looking at weather forecasts and, you know, we have more and more in many places throughout the country, we have extreme weather in the fall. You know, we have big swings and I think folks like really get focused on those big events. But basically what you're saying is a normal average weather day as rut activity is increasing. That's good. We should be happy about that. We should hunt if we can. We don't have to be discouraged if we haven't killed by now.
Don't get ate up out of social media pictures or your buddy's big grip and grin pictures or whatever, you know. Don't let that get under your skin. Just enjoy hunting. And I think it's important to remember that deer need to feed and drink. They have to maintain their metabolism almost every single day. I mean, if it's, you know, 30 degrees colder than normal, they may bed up all day and just conserve heat. This is a heat vent under here and under the hams. They open that up a lot. You ever dress a deer, you know, that's real thin hair right there. That's called a heat vent, and heat can escape real easily. So when it's really cold, it's almost like you and I put another cover over. They're going to keep that tucked in unless food's really close. But that they can't do that very long. Ruminants, you know, deer with multi-chambered stomachs, not multi-stomachs, as some people say, one stomach and a lot of chambers, four in the case of a deer, they're dependent on feeding that furnace. And so they're going to feed. So deer are going to feed, drink, dodge predators, be alerted by predators. They're going to move almost every single day. They may not follow that pattern that we hope while they're coming through this pinch point at 4:30 in the afternoon. You know, they may not follow the pattern we all dream about. I don't think they do very much, actually. But they're going to move. Get out there and go hunting. And the worst of conditions, hot, too hot, whatever it is, you don't think they're moving much, slide in closer to that bedding area because you don't have many, you may not have many minutes of legal shooting light for them to get to your position. So if the conditions are really not favorable, if you think they're not favorable for deer to move much, don't be a half mile from that bedding area. Slide in there pretty close.
We'll be right back after the break.
This season of the Outdoor Life podcast is brought to you by Moultrie Mobile Edge Pro. This is one of the most advanced and smartest wireless trail cameras. The Moultrie Mobile Edge Pro automatically finds and connects to the strongest cell signal in your area, no matter the carrier. Plus, no more SD cards. Even better, it eliminates false triggered images with AI technology built directly into the camera. This allows its smart capture technology to send only the images you want. If buck images are what you want, then buck images are what you get. It also incorporates smart zone tech, allowing you to turn off custom zones where tree limbs or tall grass cause your camera to take endless photos of nothing, which rob your camera of battery life and fills your gallery with junk images. It has the easiest activation and setup of any cell camera on the market, and it sends HD video and images to your cell phone via the Moultrie mobile app. This is the most feature-rich app available, and it will enhance your scouting and hunting experience. The Edge Pro sells for $179.99 nationwide or at MoultrieMobile.com.
Could you talk to me about precipitation now, you know, rain and snow? And one, is there data on deer movement with precipitation, and what does that say? And also, like, just what you've seen kind of from your own hunting experience and running trail cameras, how does that affect deer activity, specifically in this window that we're looking at, which is, you know, the first couple weeks of November?
So I want to say a couple things there. Be careful, you know, because I've got pictures I save, or little video clips from the trail camera of bucks moving when a downpour. You go, oh, yeah, they move in downpour. Well, that's a real small sample size compared to all the bucks where I hunt, right, or the world or wherever.
Right.
So researchers with, again, GPS-fitted deer have shown that bucks tend to move less when it's raining, probably because they can't detect predators well, right? If there's leaves out, everything's shaking, there's a lot of noise, physical noise that lets them not hear a coyote creeping up or something like that. Does tend to move a little bit more. I don't know why. My observations, boy, I love a light mist. I mean, but here's another reason that I believe the science and hunters are often saying the same thing, but don't see eye to eye. Scientists on a normal study is not taking into account the human interaction. Where's that deer going? They don't have, not many projects anyway, have a GPS on the hunter. A few have, and those are very fascinating, but not most of them. So is it a low pressure, high humidity day where deer can really detect scent a long ways off? It's a day you want to go bird hunting, or, you know, your bird dog or your coon dog can work really good because that scent's just hanging on everything. You may not think deer moving, but they just busted you way further than normal.
Oh, interesting.
Is it a bluebird day? Scent's rising, really high pressure. Scent is rising. It's a real low humidity. It's tough. If you're a rabbit hunter, your beagles are not working very good at all. They just can't pick up the scent.
Yeah.
Hunters see more deer because they're not getting busted. And I believe, I don't have any data on this, but from wearing both hats and understanding the science and being a diehard hunter, I believe that's the biggest problem, is that we don't often include the human element, and we are alerting way more deer than we think we are. Way more deer. And so I would rather hunt on a day that maybe hunters think, well, it's hot today, but the humidity's 31%. There's a constant wind. I know where my scent's going, and wherever it's going, it's not hanging long, because that humidity just kills scent. The lack of humidity kills scent. Man, I'll take that day because I can get close to deer.
Yeah.
I'm not going to alert many deer. So as a hunter, maybe rather than looking at all the front stuff, and here's another magic about fronts. Fronts are associated with the wind, right? If you've got a front moving in, there's wind.
Yep.
You're probably seeing more deer because you can hunt. You're more efficient as a hunter. You know where your scent's going, and you can plan better.
Absolutely.
that may be the whole difference in fronts. What hunters see about front is they can be a better hunter because their scent is usually going one way. There's a strong enough wind, 10, 15, 20 miles an hour. They know where their scent's going.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, because we all, not we all, but many hunters, especially up here, like we kind of plan for a northwest wind for our best spots, right? So like in my mind, I see forecast for a northwest wind. I'm like, all right, this is like time to kill a big buck. But I've got all my best spots set up for a northwest wind, you know? So that's kind of becomes like a self-fulfilling prophecy in a lot of ways, right? Because I hunt my best spots on a northwest wind, and I think the deer activity is the best on a northwest wind.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. And that's part of the fun of hunting. I'm not reducing the value of that at all in your astute observations, but there's something anyone can find. It's free out there. It's one thing the government does. It's really cool. But if you go to NOAA's website or National Weather Service, look up wind roses, like a flower rose. And you get this really cool graph for a given, usually a month at a time for almost any zip code. And it will show you the predominant wind and the wind strength. And at least where I live here, our predominant wind is southeast. And I tend to think southeast winds are not good hunting, right?
Yeah.
But the wind speed is much less on a southeast because we get a front coming in. Fronts come out of the north or west. Unless there's a hurricane, fronts aren't coming out of south. They're coming out of north and west. So we got a stronger wind. I can approach, hunt, and exit more efficiently with a strong wind, not a swirling wind.
Right.
So I'm like you. I'm looking for those northwest days, which are rare where I live in this part of the country, and I'm more successful on those days. And I wonder, I don't have research, but it seems to me that's because the wind is stronger and more consistent.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe it makes a little more sense to start paying attention to wind speed and consistency as hunters rather than just purely wind direction.
Exactly. Because remember, deer are going to feed, avoid predators, and drink water every day, almost every single day. There's not much we can really count on with whitetails, but we can count on that. They're going to move. Can we approach, hunt, and exit where they are without alerting deer?
I think I can still hear some people grinding their teeth from when you were talking about the moon. And I would be remiss to not go back and ask you about that. Just, you know, for those folks who are just, you know, waiting to send you an angry email about this moon deal.
I get them all the time. Yeah, I get them all the time.
Can you explain, one, from the the science hat, and then the two, hunter hat, why maybe our understanding of moon phases and deer activity has maybe been misunderstood or not fully understood?
Real briefly, I'm going to explain it from the Grant Woods graduate student at University of Georgia, which I think everybody admits has got a history, been a great deer school, great people there in the past and now. And I was a graduate student there, and then I went to Clemson. So during that whole time, I thought I'd cracked the moon based on observations. I had some projects where we were harvesting a lot of deer and had everyone filling out forms, you know, what's the conditions? What did you see? You know, all this data. And I was compiling it back in the day before that was automated in my little PC back in the day and all that. And I come up with the moon calendar and actually deer and deer hunting. Sorry to say that, this is just true. Published what's called the DAI, Deer Activity Index. And I'm making a little extra change, able to maybe buy a rifle or something while I'm a graduate student, which is unheard of, right? And I'm getting all this praise and people are buying them. And the doggone GPS collars come out. And you know, nothing kills a theory faster than a gang of facts. And my data fit really well the observation data, which obviously was incomplete. Because when an unbiased deer, not what humans are seeing, but a deer just doing their daily activity, I had to call and cancel that project. I personally took that off the market because it was wrong. So then I was a partner of another project, several scientists, and in total, in brief, 14,000 fetuses were removed from hunter-harvested does, late-season does, the fetus big enough that we could, you know, see it and get an accurate age, just like if a human is pregnant and they go get an ultrasound, they measure crown to rump, you see them measuring, clicking, and they say, oh, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, your baby's going to be born X. Well, when you measure a fetus, you backdate and say conception date was Y. So 14,000, I think it was, if I remember right, from Maine to Florida. Huge sample size, one of the biggest in our history. And the short story is, I won't bore you with science, but the regression line couldn't have been flatter. There was zero relationship. We couldn't have lied and made it flatter. There was zero relationship in all these different states. It doesn't matter what month the rut was in, right? We're just looking, is there a positive or negative slope? There was no relationship to any form of the moon, not just moon phase. Distance of the moon from the Earth's surface to the moon's surface because it's an elliptical orbit. You know, all these features of the moon that no one talks about. They just look at moon phase because we see that really obviously.
Sure.
We could find no relationship. None.
Okay.
So Grandpa was wrong, unfortunately. I love my grandpa too, everyone. And he was a brilliant hunter, but he wouldn't kill him because of what he thought about the moon.
Could we throw Grandpa a bone on this one? Is it possible that maybe it has nothing to do with conception times, but maybe just general activity?
We don't see, that's been looked at more recently. Right now, there's a bunch of deer, as we talk, wearing a GPS collar across the Whitetails Ranch. And several people just that are hunters and scientists, just as an aside, they're studying whatever, deer home range size or whatever they're studying. And as an aside, they pull that data against moon data. There's no increase in activity.
Dang it. Sorry, Grandpa.
I know.
Couldn't even get that one.
You know, there is with saltwater fish, great big bodies of water where, you know, the moon controls the tide, right?
Sure.
And so that's stirring up bait fish and all these things. But the moon's gravity impact on the earth is not strong enough to knock an acorn off a tree or, you know, make a soybean ripen quicker or whatever's going on in your area. There's just no data that shows it has anything to do with deer activity.
All right. Well, when you put it that way, it sounds pretty conclusive.
Yeah. And my email address is Santa Claus at the moon or something. Don't write me, folks. I've already had thousands of these hate emails, so don't send any more.
Okay. I won't ask any more moon questions either. One thing I do want to ask you about is barometric pressure, you know, which is often associated with the fronts. Do you pay attention to barometric pressure? Is that something that hunters should have an eye on? What do you make of that?
I and other researchers have looked at that as far as general deer activity. And again, no relationship. And I think the disconnect is because we're not considering, can hunters actually get closer to their corridor, to the deer? And on that high pressure, our scent is literally rising. You take a little puffer or your milkweed or whatever, and it's going to go up on a real high pressure day. So we're able to get closer to deer without them detecting our scent. Maybe we're moving or whatever, but our scent is going up. And our scent usually gives us away before they could even see if we're moving or not. So
yeah,
I think it's more of a relationship. And I think where we've been disconnected for a decade or more between hunters and researchers is we're not talking about the hunter's ability to hunt. We're totally focused on the deer, what's making them move. And we need to accept they're feeding and drinking and avoiding predators every day of their life. What factors are in favor of hunters being able to be a more efficient predator?
Yeah, that definitely is the theme from this podcast. And I think probably on the hunting side, one of the challenges there is that kind of forces us to evaluate our actions, right? It's much easier to I don't want to say blame, but important the factors that aren't in our control. You know, like, well, we didn't get them because of the weather, or we just didn't have the right wind, or high pressure, low pressure. That's why we didn't kill them.
Oh, yeah.
It's much harder to look at our own strategies and tactics and stand placement and everything and be like, all right, well, what should I have changed out of that? That's not as easy as a solution as just putting it on the weather or pressure.
True in all things in life, right? True in all things. Yeah. We rarely want to accept the blame. Well, doggone it, my rifle. And I love new rifles, folks, but my rifle missed. I got to get a new rifle. I've used that to my wife also, but it's rarely the gun. She's the guy behind the gun, right?
Yeah.
If you think about on those warm days that we think deer aren't moving, oh, it's too hot, I'm not going to stand. It's when it's warmer, it's usually more humid.
Mm-hmm.
Our scent is traveling further.
Yeah. No, I mean, it makes perfect sense. How about hunting mornings versus evenings, or just kind of deer activity mornings versus evenings as we go from pre-rut into kind of the heart of the rut? Do you have any insight there for folks on deer movement?
Yeah, I'm a morning person. I'm up early every day. I love mornings, but it's tough for me to get in on my property the way the access is and everything. Tough for me to get in many stands without alerting deer on my way in there. So what we see, again, going back to GPS, because that's kind of like the definitive tool right now for wild free-ranging deer, not pin work, is they do move a little bit later in the day and earlier in the afternoon, and, you know, as we get closer to the peak of the rut. But movement's still very rare in the middle of the day. People kill big bucks in the middle of the day, and they write articles, well, oh, you know, you got to hunt in the middle of the day. But loads of data from many, many states show that's a small percentage of movement. Let's lay this one out for you here.
Okay.
So dawn and dusk, every study, my scrape research way 30 years ago, every study shows that's the peak of deer movement, dawn and dusk. And a lot of people say that's because their eyes, you know, they can't see right in the dark. Well, we know that's not true. I've jumped a bunch of deer. I never heard one run into a tree when I jumped them going in my stand. Or they can't move in the middle of the day. No, they narrow down that pupil. It's not a vision thing. They live by their nose more or less, okay? So at dawn and dusk, at dawn, it's been cold all night, cold air sinks. We put warm air in a balloon to make it rise, cold air sinks. So it's been sinking all night long. The ground has cooled off, right? The earth is losing heat all night long on a normal night. And then the sun starts coming up. And this place gets a little sunshine. This is still in the shade. This slopes a different direction. And that air starts churning. Deer, elk, critters with a big nose have protection almost 360 degrees from their nose. Get midday, everything's warmed up. If it's not a cloudy day, all the scent's rising. So at night and full daytime, they only get nasal protection, if you will, from 180 degrees, just throwing a number out, half. But at sunrise and sunset, because the earth is cooling, earth is warming, thermals are shifting, they're getting protection at a lot greater area.
Yeah. Man, I had not thought about it that way. But now, just thinking about that, and I think any hunter, any deer hunter who really pays attention to the wind can imagine this own experience of sitting in a stand and you've got the perfect wind. Maybe it's in your face or a crosswind, and it just is good all afternoon, just consistent all afternoon. And then it starts to get down to that prime time. And then you're like, oh, I feel just a little breeze on my back now, all of a sudden. Oh, now it's just swirling a little bit. And now you start to get all anxious.
And the GPS data shows that so clearly, again, from north, south, east to west. Shows it so clearly. And this is what drives me nuts. So again, I'm early. I often get up, even deer hunting time, I get up early, you know, work on my computer, check the weather, do whatever. Because if you're that guy or gal that gets in your blind or stand 2 hours before daylight, that's just more hours for your scent to infiltrate every direction. Ideally, you do what I call hunting like a bobcat. If you look at GPS data on bobcats, they move in pretty big circles, generically speaking, and their movement will get them right when you think, you know, in rabbit habitat, right when rabbits are supposed to be active or whatever, okay? Ideal hunt is, man, I got this big buck, and I think he's on this acorn flat every day about dark. Well, get there 5 minutes before dark. So your scent has not had time for that, you know, aberrant wind to push your scent this way or that way or that way.
Yeah.
I call that hunting like a bobcat. Get right to where you think the prey is going to be just a few minutes before. I'm very successful like that. I love spending time in the woods. So what I'm going to do is hunt somewhere else where my scent's not going into the best hunting area. And then if I have the opportunity, I'll slide into that prime area just a few minutes before basically the last illegal shooting light and see what's moving. Tougher to do as a bow hunter than a gun hunter. Much tougher to do as a bow hunter.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I think a lot of people, their best spot, they think they got to be there early because they don't want to bump them. You don't want to bump them on the way in, right? So you're like, well, the earlier I can get there, the better. But to your point, yeah, that's just more time for your scent to disperse and for the wind to swirl and for that deer to, you know, have the chance of smelling you.
We're respirating all the time. And warm air is coming out of our bodies. It's very moist. We lose a lot of moisture by respirating, by exhaling. We lose a lot of moisture. And that warm, moist air is ideal for carrying scent. Here's a little tip. You know, as deer hunters, don't eat your Snickers bar. I love Snickers. Don't eat Snickers on your stand. Don't eat something sugary on the stand because sugar causes bacteria to multiply in your mouth, grow like crazy. And that's what causes bad breath. If you've got to have a snack on a stand, how about some dry saltine crackers or something?
Oh, man. Grant, it's Halloween. We're just going to have all this Halloween candy. You're telling us we can't bring that? We got to bring saltine crackers?
I'm telling you, man. I'm glad, darling. I'm glad.
All right. But I guess it's worth it if, you know, we could shoot that target buck. I'll forgo the peanut M&Ms and Reese's, I guess.
Yeah, our breath is a big thing. And so I think you asked about this. I think afternoons, a lot of data shows this, are a little bit more successful per unit effort, per, you know, hours out there, because you're going in when the deer are most likely bedded or in cover somewhere and you're not alerting them. It's a real special stand, like, you know, the soybean fields over here and the wind is going this way and you park over here and walk in and the deer come to you. It's a real special stand to have a morning stand where you don't alert the deer. That's the magic of the rut. Deer, not bucks especially, are not on a pattern. They're willy-nilly throughout their home range. Data clearly shows this. And you have a better chance of getting into your stand in the morning without alerting deer because they're not on necessarily pattern. From now on, I will start hunting a lot of mornings.
Yeah.
Before this, I haven't hunted hard at any mornings because my property is not real conducive to getting in because of my access without alerting deer in the morning.
So now you're more comfortable hunting mornings just because the deer are going to be kind of in a more random movement.
Exactly.
Or, so it's not like they're on this pattern that you're going to blow up earlier in the season.
Or they're on their feet another 20, 30 minutes. Just throwing a number out, folks. Don't quote me on that one.
Sure.
And I can slide. What I want to do right now is be downwind of a bedding area. Mm-hmm. Because bucks are going to cruise that bedding area on the downwind side. Not every time, but odds are good, looking for a receptive doe. So I want to get there and get downwind of a bedding area and wait for that buck to cruise downwind. Or wherever I'm hunting, I have a better chance of getting in and not busting a buck right now.
Yeah. Let's just say I'm asking this question for a friend. And this friend of mine has a nice shooter buck on camera pretty consistently in this area, but it's all nighttime photos, you know, anywhere between 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. And the buck isn't really showing up anywhere else in daylight. And this area is pretty well covered by my friend here. What do you do with that? I mean, do you hunt in the area that he's showing up just hoping that one day he decides to show up there during daylight? Or do we have to like move to a different part of the farm and try to find him on his feet there?
I wonder if maybe you know your friend's strategy here, but how many acres is that trail camera pattern covering?
I mean, we've got about four cameras in a, let's say a 40-acre area.
So let's just say on average to smaller size for a buck, a mature buck's home range, square mile, a little bit bigger maybe during the rut, and you're covering a 40-acre square mile, 640 acres. You can do some math here. You're covering a real small percent
right
that buck's home range. What you're telling me is at that 40 acres, he's there, you know, at late night.
Right.
I would be as close to one edge or the other of that, depending on if you're morning or afternoon hunting. If you don't have permission to hunt more than that 40 acres, I would tell your friend to get as close to one edge or the other, because you happen to locate the, you know, night shift of that buck's range.
Yeah.
The day shift is somewhere else.
Yeah, that 40 acres that we've got him, my friend, that's within a 400 acre property. But we've got stands and cameras and everything else all over this other 400 acres, but we just have not really got them on camera consistently anywhere other than this little patch.
And that makes sense. Is that patch what you would, your friend would maybe consider bedding area or cover?
Yeah, it's outside of bedding area, between bedding area and a good food source. But
yeah, so he's just getting up milling around a little bit at night.
Yeah.
And I'm guilty of this too. I've already admitted I'm a trail camera junkie. I got way too many, but that doesn't mean I'm capturing all the deer. Like the young buck I saw last night out of my stand was 10 yards out of cone of view of my trail camera. Didn't take a picture. I got all kinds of video of the deer. He did not take a picture of him. So it's just a reminder.
Yeah.
It wasn't the trail camera's fault.
Right.
It's just, I had it pointed right in the center of a hidey old food plot. He skirted the edge and worked his grant. Right. It's a little reminder for me, just because a trail camera is not getting hits in a certain area doesn't mean there's not deer passing within a few yards
right.
of that trail camera zone. So if you're in a pinch point, boy, there's a bluff here and a river here and they got to walk here, you feel really good about that. If it's more generic habitat,
right.
man, they could be just out of your view. So trail cameras are a huge tool. And I think they're also a big negative because hunters get on their phone and check their cameras. Ah, nothing moving. I'm not going hunting. Well, they're moving, folks. They got to eat. They got to avoid predators. They got to get some water. They're moving. Don't hunt where your trail camera is. If it's not showing anything, there's no need to set in there. Hunt somewhere else.
Yeah. All right. I will tell my friend that we're going to start targeting the other side of the farm. Maybe see if we can see this deer from our stand. Okay, last question for you, Grant. Just kind of looking ahead to this weekend hunting and the following week. You know, everyone's going to want to be out hunting the rut. What are some good kind of research based principles that deer hunters can kind of have in the back of their mind to make decisions on of when and where they're going to hunt?
Yeah, I think there's one that's not known, so I'll start with that one, or not commonly known, I should say, is fairly recent research shows that almost a pretty high percent, more than 25% minimum, of twin fawns or stepbrother, stepsister, that doe bred with multiple bucks within a 24 to 36 hour period. Okay. There's a lot of competition and harassment of a receptive doe, competition for and harassment of. So naturally, they're going to want to go to thick cover to avoid these marauding bucks. So again, one of my favorite strategies with a bow or with a gun is to overlook with a gun or be really close to thick escape cover, not just bedding cover, escape cover during the rut, because bucks, does receptive does are going, not just does, receptive does. I'm probably going to avoid that big ag field or food plot where there's 15 does pouring in every afternoon, because we know you're going, oh, there's does, there's bound to be one receptive. It seems like on the GPS studies, again, that when a doe becomes receptive, now we're not talking to the doe, we don't notice for sure, right? But all of a sudden, that time of year to be aberrant pattern. And if the fawns are tagged or GPS called, also it should drop those fawns and go a different part of our home range than normal. It's almost like, again, we can't talk to them, we don't know, but it sure looks like, hear me clearly, looks like that these does are saying, kids, you don't want to be with me right now because there's going to be trouble. So you stay over here in the normal core area that we know is safe from predators, whatever, and I'm going to go to the outside edge, or I'm going to go to this really thick, gnarly cover over here. And I personally have tagged several of my better bucks using that strategy. I'm not hunting the volume of does, just hoping one's receptive. I'm hunting where a receptive doe would be.
Yeah.
Tip two. This is not a brand. You know, you go wherever and you buy the big grunt call and you get the big tuba call. Sounds like a 5-year-old, a bull of the woods call, you know. Throw that thing in the ditch. You want to sound like a yearling or a 2-year-old buck tending a doe. And big bucks have no problem rushing right in. If you sound like the bull of the woods, they're going to swing downwind. They want to see who there's going to be a fight. They don't want to rush in on, you know, a mode Muhammad Ali or whoever, you know, back in the day.
Right.
But if you're a teenager,
right,
man, they're going to rush right in and steal the doe. So, and this is tough to do. You got to have a real thin reed usually. I'm not a call maker. I'm not selling anything that has something on the end of it to weight it down. Because if you just get a thin reed, it's going to be real quick when you put air pressure on that. And I think the deer goes, well, that's a different bird. I haven't heard that bird before. You know, you want a high pitch and a normal cadence. That's the secret to a good grunt call. A high pitch, a young buck, because a good grunt that time of year communicates, I'm tending a receptive doe. That's what you want to sound like. That's the magic this time of year. And then I don't blind grunt unless, you know, there's a lake behind me or, you know, whatever. That I don't, a big pasture, I don't think deer are going to run out in. Because when you grunt, there's still a good chance you're going to get down the window before you ever see them. My good friend Dr. Mickey Hellickson did a bunch of published research on this with rattling antlers years ago. The best research still to date on rattling. You can find it online. And I think the same is true for grunting, except at a more micro scale. So, and the third thing is, I see a buck, you know, I'm bow hunting, he's passing out there at 100 yards, I reach for my grunt call. No, before you hit that thing, think, if he responds right now, he's going to cut my wind. It's not just grunting. It's grunting at a time that they're likely to be able to approach without picking you off, getting your scent. So be careful when you grunt, because it's an amazing tool. But it can also, deer are going to respond most likely, but are they going to pick you off before they get in view?
Right. Yeah, because now they're looking specifically in the direction that you made that noise, where before they're walking, they don't know you're there, but now they're looking for what they know they heard.
Rattling's a great tool also, but there's so much movement and it's so loud, they can pinpoint exactly where you are.
Yeah.
I want to grunt with the lowest volume I can that the deer shows some sign. I usually grunt two or three times. I keep upping the volume till I see them respond. Once they respond, my grunt call is usually done.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. That's a good one. Anything else? Final tip number three?
I think my tip is to enjoy. I'm a manager. I'm known to, you know, try to help people grow some nice deer. Sometimes folks get a little serious about that. I've been too serious about it. So, man, enjoy. Have fun. Hunting should be fun.
The Outdoor Life podcast is edited and produced by me, executive editor Natalie Krebs. It's hosted by our editor-in-chief, Alex Robinson. Music in this episode was composed and performed by Jennifer Jordan and Eric Starkzan via APM Music. For more deer hunting tips and insight, tune into this podcast next week for another episode brought to you by Moultrie Mobile Edge Pro.